Comenzamos entonces, si estamos listos, la segunda parte en las fantasías del caminante. Hoy llegamos grabados, pero con la calidez de siempre. Leo Sangari es el responsable de la puesta en el aire. Santiago Giordano, quien les habla, trata de guiarlos en este recorrido que hoy empezaba en la depresión, la gran depresión de octubre de 1929, los años 30. Escuchamos música de George Gershwin, de Aaron Copland, de Duke Ellington. Y la década del 30 fue también difícil en Europa. Además, conmovida por el avance del nazifascismo. En los años previos a la Segunda Guerra Mundial, numerosos músicos europeos llegaron a Estados Unidos escapando de aquellas torpezas de la política europea. Y hay un momento en el que por Estados Unidos se puede ver transitar a Igor Stravinsky, a Béla Bartók, a Paul Hindemith, a Ernst Krenek, a Martinu, otro húngaro, que van a ser docentes, o van a estar dirigiendo, van a estar presentando sus obras, en fin, que se van a incorporar de alguna manera a la escena musical norteamericana y que van a ejercer cierta influencia sobre esa escena musical. No solo influenciar a los músicos norteamericanos, sino que van a influenciar el gusto del público. Y es entre las cosas que van a influenciar, digamos, los elementos europeos que influenciarán a América, Norteamérica en aquella época, está el espíritu de la Gebrauchmusik, la música de uso, que había sido tan importante para compositores como Paul Hindemith, como Kurt Weill. Música que encontró su correlato en Norteamérica, del mismo modo que la había encontrado como la música de todos los días en la Francia del Grupo de los Seis. Marie Galante es una obra de Jacques Deval, escrita, estrenada en 1934, basada en su propia novela que lleva el mismo título, cuya música escribió Kurt Weill. Y en esa música había algunas canciones que resultaron ir más allá del teatro mismo. Canciones escritas por Kurt Weill en colaboración con Roger Farnay. Vamos a escuchar esas cuatro canciones de Marie Galante: La muchacha de Burdeos, El gran Lustucru, El rey de Aquitania y Yo espero una nave. Gil Gómez, la soprano, con John Constable en piano.
Tous les salons, les filles. Thank you. nuages blancs, le blanc des rubis et le bleu des diamants, le gris à sa couronne et son épée au flanc, le bleu m'aime le mieux et j'aime mieux le blanc. La aurora qui t'aime, s'il vient nous marcher pour servir la reine, m'en verra chercher le roi. Beautiful girl, bella francese, de dollars, tu seras content, entre chez moi, mets-toi à l'aise, prends-moi, paye-moi, et va-t'en, parce
De Kurt Weill escuchábamos cuatro canciones de Marie Galant. La soprano Jill Gómez cantaba junto al pianista John Constable. Y ya que estamos en la música de Kurt Weill, hablando de los años 30, de la depresión, de la crisis, de la crisis que trae la crisis, de la crisis de valores que trae la crisis económica. Hablando de Kurt Weill, no podemos mencionar a Bertolt Brecht. Y hablando de Weill y Brecht, no podemos mencionar la ópera de Tres Centavos, que compusieron en 1928, basada en la ópera del mendigo, The Beggar's Opera, de John Gay, que es una balada, una ballad ópera, escrita en 1728, que es casi el único ejemplo que nos llega de esa manera de ópera muy satírica, o de esa manera de espectáculo satírico que usaba algunas de las convenciones de la ópera. John Gay, el autor de Beggar's Opera, ridiculiza a las clases altas en esta ópera. Se ríe de su afición a la ópera italiana, por ejemplo. Pero más allá de la burla hay una crítica social, porque compara la falta de moral de las clases altas con la de los rateros del Newgate, dejando en claro que lo único que diferenciaba a unos y a otros era el dinero, ni más ni menos. En 1948, mediando el siglo XX, Benjamin Britten creó una adaptación de la ópera del mendigo. Nuevas armonizaciones, arregló las canciones preexistentes, agregó algunos diálogos adicionales y contó con la colaboración del poeta Tyrone Guthrie. Introdujo un nuevo personaje, Macbeth, que en la versión de Britten fue interpretado por Peter Pearce. Y vamos a escuchar momentos del primer acto de la ópera del mendigo de John Gay en la versión de Benjamin Britten.
Thank you. Against rogues and for 'em, for it is but fitting that we should protect and encourage cheats, since we live by 'em.
'Tis woman that seduces, woman is all mankind. By her weakness, not taught the weed art. Her very eyes can cheat when more she's kind. She tricks us of our money. Woman that seduces all mankind, by her we first have taught the weeded art. Her very eyes can cheat when more she's kind. She tricks us of our money with our hearts. For her, like wolves by night, we roam for prey and practice every fraud to bribe her charms. For suits of love like
Newgate, boy, and let my friends know what I intend.
I'll away, for it is a pleasure to be the messenger of comfort to friends in affliction.
If love the virgin's heart invade, how like a moth the sea invades, still plays about the virgin's heart invade, how like
Look here, wife, I would indulge the girl as far as prudently we can in anything but marriage. If the wench does not know her own profit, sure she knows her own pleasure better than to make herself a property. If the affair is not already done, I will terrify her from it by the example of our neighbours. I will go to her this moment and sift her.
Never was a man more out of the way in an argument than my husband. Why must our Polly, forsooth, differ from her sex and love only her husband? All men are thieves in love, and like a woman the better for being another's property. A maid is like the golden ore which hath gained its intrinsic lint. Its worth is never known before it is tried and impressed in the mint. A wife's like a guinea in gold, stamped with the name of her spouse. Now here, now there is water is sold, and is current in every house. Is current in every house. Come hither, Filch. I am as fond of this child as though my mind misgave me he were my own. He hath as fine a hand at picking a pocket as a woman, and is as nimble-fingered as a juggler. But hark you, my lad, do not tell me a lie, for you know I hate a liar. Do you know of anything that hath passed between Captain Macheath and our Polly?
I beg you, madam, do not ask me, for I must either tell a lie to you or to Miss Polly, for I promised her I would not tell.
But when the honour of the family is concerned...
I shall lead a sad life with Miss Polly if ever she comes to know that I told you. Besides, I would not willingly forfeit my own honour by betraying anybody.
Yonder comes my husband and Polly. Come, Filch, you shall go with me into my own room and tell me the whole story. I will give thee a glass of the most delicious cordial that I keep for my own drinking.
I know as well as any of the fine ladies how to make the most of myself and of my man, too. A woman knows how to be mercenary, though she hath never been in a court or at an assembly. We have it in our natures, Papa. If I allow Captain Macheath some trifling liberties, I have this watch and other visible marks of his favour to show for it. A girl who cannot grant some things and refuse what is most material will make but a poor hand of her beauty and soon be thrown upon the common.
Against your toying and trifling with a customer in the way of business, or to get out of secrets or so. But if I find out that you have played the fool and have married you, jade you, I will cut your throat, hussy! Now you know my mind!
What? A folly is a sad slut who heeds what we have taught her. I wonder if any man alive will ever rear a daughter, for she must have both hoods and gowns and tombs to swell her pride.
Papa, you're so sad.
I should have lived comfortably so long together if ever we had been married. Baggage!
I knew she was always a proud slut. And now the wench hath played the fool and married, because, forsooth, she would do like the gentry.
Tell me, Ossie, are you ruined or no?
Well, with Polly's fortune, she might very well have gone off to a person of distinction.
Yes, that you might, you pouting slut.
What is the wench done? Speak, or I will make you plead by squeezing out an answer from you. Are you really bound wife to him, or are you only upon liking?
Will Cupid our mothers obey? For my heart were as frozen as ice, and his flame would have melted away. When he kissed me so closely pressed, 'twas so sweet that I must have complied. So I thought it both safest and best to marry for fear you should
and all the hopes of our family are gone forever and ever.
And Macheath may hang his father and mother-in-law in hopes to get into their daughter's fortune.
He did not marry him, as it is the fashion, coolly and deliberately for honour or money. But I love him.
Love him? Worse and worse. I thought the girl had been better bred.
My head swims. I am distracted. I cannot support myself.
See, wench, to what a condition you've reduced your poor mother. A glass of cordial this instant.
Oh, give her another glass, sir. My mamma drinks double the quantity whenever she is out of order. This, you see, fetches her.
The girl shows such a readiness and so much concern that I could almost find it in my heart to forgive her.
Toyed and kissed by keeping men off, you keep them on. But his heart is wild, is so pleased me. What I did, you must have
easy. I have a thought she'll soon set all matters again to rights. Why so melancholy, Polly? Since what is done cannot be undone, we must all endeavour to make the best of it.
Well, Polly, as far as one woman can forgive another, I forgive thee. Your father is too fond of you, hussy.
Then all my sorrows are at an end.
A mighty likely speech in troth for a wench who is just married.
I like a ship when storms was tossed, yet afraid to put into land. For seizing the boat, the vessel is lost, for treasure is contraband. The waves are in my heart is paid, oh joy beyond expression. The safe for sure I ask of you, my all is in my possession, possession, my all is in my possession.
I am very sensible, husband, that Captain Macheath is worth money. But I am in doubt whether he hath not two or three wives already. And then, if he should die in a session or two, Polly's dower would come into dispute.
That indeed is a point which ought to be considered. The lawyers are bitter enemies to those in our way.
They do not care that anybody should get a clandestine livelihood but themselves. A fox may steal your hen.
A fox may steal your hen.
Or your health and pence.
Or your health and pence.
A daughter rob your chest.
A daughter rob your chest.
A wife may steal your rest.
A wife may steal your rest.
Leave your goods and paint.
Leave your goods and
paint. Leave your goods and paint. But this is all but pigging. With rest and chest and chest. But now, Polly, to your affair, for matters must not be left as they are. You're married, then, it seems.
Yes, sir.
And had you not the common views of a gentlewoman in your marriage, Polly?
I do not know what you mean, sir.
Of a jointure and of being a widow. Why, that is the whole scheme and intention of all marriage articles. The comfortable estate of widowhood is the only hope that keeps up a wife's spirit. If you have any views of this sort, Polly, I shall think the match not so very unreasonable.
Oh, I dread to hear your advice.
Secure what he hath got. Have him peached at the next sessions, and then at once you are made a rich widow.
What? Murder the man I love? The blood runs cold at my heart with the very thought of it.
Aye, husband, now you have nicked the matter. To have him peached is the only thing could ever make me forgive her.
Oh, ponder well, be not severe, so save a wretched life from the rope that hangs, my dear, depends upon his life.
But your duty to your parents, hussy, obliges you to hang him. What would many a wife give for such an opportunity?
What is a jointure? What is widowhood to me? I know my heart. I cannot survive. To your poor Polly.
What? Is the fool in love in earnest, then? Why, wench, thou art ashamed to thy very sex.
Keep out of the way, Polly, for fear of mischief, and consider of what is proposed to you.
Away, hussy! Hang your husband and be dutiful. The thing, husband, must and shall be done. For the sake of intelligence, we must take other measures and have him peached next session without her consent. If she will not know her duty, we know ours. I will undertake to manage Polly.
And I will prepare matters for you.
Now I'm a wretch indeed.
Methinks I see him already in the cart, sweeter and more lovely than the nosegay in his hand. I hear the crowd extolling his resolution and intrepidity. What volleys of sighs are sent from the windows of Holborn that so comely a youth should be brought to disgrace? I see him at the tree. The whole circle are in tears. Even butchers weep. Jack Ketch himself hesitates to perform his duty and would be glad to lose his fee by a reprieve. What then will become of Polly? As yet, I may inform him of their design and aid him in his escape. It shall be so. But then he flies, absents himself, and I bar myself from his dear, dear conversation. That too will distract me. If he keep out of the way, my papa and mama may in time relent, and we may be happy. If he stays, he is hanged, and then he is lost. Forever. He intended to lie concealed in my room till the dusk of evening. If they are abroad, I'll this instant let him out, lest some accident should prevent him.
Pistols misfire, and my mare slip a shoulder while I am pursued, if I ever forsake thee.
Oh, nay, my dear, I have no reason to doubt you, for I find in the romance you lent me, none of the great heroes were ever false in love.
My heart was so free, it roved like the bee, till Polly my passion requited. My heart was so free, it roved like the bee, till Polly my passion requited. I sipped each flower, I changed every hour. I sipped each flower, I changed every hour. But here every flower is united. But here every flower is united.
Were you sent us to transportation? Sure, my dear, you could not leave me behind you, could you?
Is there any power, any force that could tear me from thee? You might sooner tear a pension from the hands of a courtier, a fee from a lawyer, a pretty woman from a looking glass, or any woman from Quadrille, but to tear me from thee is impossible.
When I lay on Greenland's coast, and in my arms embraced my lass, warm on east eternal frost, to soon the half-year's night would pass.
My soul to Indian soil, soon as the burning day was closed, I could mock the sultry toil, when on my charmer's breast repose.
And I would love you all the day.
With me you'd fondly strive.
I would go with thee. But oh, how shall I speak it? I must be torn from thee. We must part.
How? Part?
We must, we must. My papa and mamma are set against thy life. They are preparing evidence against thee. Thy life depends upon a moment. Be gone. Farewell.
Oh, what pain it is to part. Can I leave thee? Can I leave thee? Oh, what pain it is to part. Can I forever leave thee? But lest death my love should thwart and bring thee to the fatal cut, thus I tear thee from my bleeding heart. Fly hence and let me leave thee. One kiss and then, one kiss, be gone, farewell.
My hand, my heart, my dear, are so riveted to thine that I cannot unloose my hold.
But my papa may intercept thee, and then I should lose the very glimmering of hope.
Must I then go?
And will not absence change your love?
If you doubt it, let me stay and be hanged.
Oh, how I fear, how I tremble. Go! But when safety will give you leave, you will be sure to see me again. For till then, Polly is wretched.
The miser thus a shilling sees, which he's obliged to pay, with sighs resigns it by degrees, and this is gone for.
His sparrows flown, the bird in sorrow sighs, but soon as out of sight, 'tis gone, whines, whimpers, sobs and cries.
The sea climbs the swaying mast to wave his adieu, till home of friends are lost at last, and darkness hides the
de John Gay y Benjamin Britten. Escuchábamos momentos del primer acto de la ópera del mendigo. Susan Bickley, la mezzosoprano, Jeremy White en bajo, Lea Marianne Jones, mezzosoprano, Tom Randall, tenor, Anthony Gardiner, tenor, Donald Maxwell, barítono, Sarah Fox, soprano, Francis McCafferty, mezzosoprano, junto a la Sinfónica Ciudad de Londres, junto al coro de esa institución, todos dirigidos por Christian Cornyn. John Gay y su ópera del mendigo, Kurt Weill y sus canciones, Benjamin Britten remontando el tiempo, en fin. Así pasamos la tarde en las fantasías del caminante, escuchando música, para resumir. Y para escuchar música vamos a volver, por supuesto. Pero en tanto nos despedimos con un Kurt Weill distinto. Elvis Costello nos interpreta Lost in the Stars. Con esto te decimos gracias, Leo Sangari, que estuvo en la operación técnica, y quien les habla, Santiago Giordano. Siempre dispuestos a regresar en los caminos de las fantasías del caminante. Chau.
Before Lord God made the sea and the land, He held all the stars in the palm of His hand, and they ran through His fingers like grains of sand, and one little star fell along. Then the Lord God hunted through the wide night air for the little dark star in the wind down there, and He stated and promised He'd take special care so it wouldn't get lost again. Now man, watching over him, keeping track how it all goes on. But I've been walking through the night and the day till my eyes get weary and my head turns gray, and sometimes it seems maybe God's gone away, forgetting the promise that we heard Him say, and we're lost out here in the stars, little stars, big stars, blowing through the night. And we're lost out here in the stars, little stars, big stars, blowing through the night. And we're lost out here in the stars.